Before we begin, I want to let you know that today's episode includes discussion of suicide, mental health struggles and family estrangement. This conversation is shared with care and honesty and it reflects one person's lived experience. Please take care while listening. Pause if you need to or skip this episode if it feels like too much for you right now. Okay, everyone, welcome back. This week, I am sitting across from the lovely Alva O'Donnell. Hi, Alva.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
Alva is joining me. We were just discussing it there from the back of beyond. She is from the most beautiful part. She's living in Carrow, which is in deep in Connemara land. And I was just praising her for getting across the town here in about an hour.
Yeah.
Galway City, listen, takes 50 minutes to get from A to B sometimes in this place.
Get used to it.
Yeah. So look, we are going to sit down today and have a little bit of a chat. And it's a little bit different. We don't know where we're going to go with this, but it feels very different. And it's something that I really want to talk about. I think a lot of listeners want to kind of discuss loss in different ways. We're so used to talking about losing someone in the traditional sense, it's kind of death. But there are other ways to feel loss, to lose people in your life. That can happen in a multitude of different ways. So that's kind of what we're really going to focus on. So I suppose to get there, what we might do is go back to where you're from and what growing up was like for you. We will get into it a little bit later, but I suppose that environment that you grew up in is not one that you're really involved with now. But let's maybe just go back, if you don't mind, and tell me where you were born and kind of what it was like as a child for you.
Okay, I was born in Galway, grew up in Spittal, just by the beach there.
Beautiful.
And I think I had quite a nice childhood, actually, when I think about it. Lots of cousins, grandparents next door. And I think back in those days, the kids would just run around the fields and, you know, you'd be at the beach every day. Just the kids. You know, you never really saw an adult.
Okay.
And I think times were happy. A lot of my time was on my own, though. You know, I remember I used to go down to the beach at nighttime when everyone was asleep.
Wow.
And I used to sit on a rock and look at the moon over the sea, and I used to cry, and I don't know why, and I don't know why a 13-year-old would have something to cry about, but I remember just being on my own a lot, at nighttime especially. And I think looking back as an adult, it's easy to see why. You know, growing up, my cousins were happy kids, and I was a happy kid, but maybe it wasn't normal, I suppose, like my friends, you know, wasn't normal. I felt different going into school even, you know, we were treated differently. We had lived in England briefly. And so when I returned from England, I had no Irish and you'd be in trouble at school for not speaking Irish. So I was automatically just put to the back and ignored, I suppose.
Okay.
So I was already the odd one out starting school in Spittal. But I had friends and my friends helped me. They'd translate work for me and everything, and we just got on with things. Mm. But it was a struggle with just the language, because I had never heard anyone speak Irish, even though I'm from Spittal. I never heard anyone speak Irish to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thinking of that image of you sitting on the rock at nighttime. Mm. It's very sad and lonely. Can you remember, like, I suppose vividly, how you were feeling then? As you said, I suppose you would have been crying a lot.
Lonely. It's funny because I lost that memory for a long time. That's only a recent memory I have, because I heard a song on the radio, Viva Forever, Spice Girls. And I remember I had a Walkman back then with the Spice Girls tape. And I used to always fast forward to Viva Forever so that I could cry. And I remember listening to the Walkman on the beach and just feeling sad, but I don't know why I was sad.
Mm-hmm.
I think just probably everything, you know, school, lack of school. I missed a lot of fifth class, sixth class. Just feeling left behind, like I wasn't really learning anything, but I wanted to learn. Just not being given the chance, I suppose, to be like my friends.
Okay.
Yeah. My brother was born when I was 10. So, and I loved it. I loved walking him over the prom in his buggy. I loved making his bottles. And yeah. Okay.
So a big sense of feeling different.
Yeah. I remember spending a lot of time at my friends' houses as well at the weekends. And I loved it because I knew the difference. There was a difference, you know. They would have their beds made for them. They would have sausages on toast in the morning. And I used to love that. And I used to feel real love from my friends' moms, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something that probably made me sad, although I don't know if that's how I felt at the time.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
So as you grow up, when you get to the age of 16, 17, I suppose that's kind of around the age where if you want to make a break away and become independent, it's kind of possible, especially back then. Mm. I know I was gone at the age of 17. Is that what you did after school, or what did you do once you finished? Did you go to secondary school?
I was in secondary school in Spittal. I did my junior cert.
How was that for you then?
I loved it. Right. I spent so much time studying, taking it all in. I was working a lot around the exams. So every day after school, I'd go to work. I'd come home at like 11. I'd study, soak it all up, and then I'd go for the exam in the morning. I just felt like this is going to be something to prove, I suppose. I can prove to people that I'm smart, you know. My favourite subjects were English and history, not maths, but I did really well. It's funny because I remember the day of the results so clear. And I remember seeing parents coming into the school. And it was so strange. I was just like, what's the big deal? Why is the parents coming in? And I just walked out right past them and went home holding my exams, my results. And no one ever asked me, how did you do? I remember my friend's mom said to me, how did you do? And that was it. No one ever asked me, but I was so proud of myself. But I realized then, you know, I'm working, I'm making money. I'm smart. I can leave home. I don't need to be at home anymore.
Mm.
But I continued working, and I had every intention of going back to school after the junior cert, which I did. So that was September, October time. Things just got difficult and I left home. But I stayed in school for September, October, say this is fourth year. Mm. But I couldn't stay in school then.
Okay.
So it was October I left school.
Mm.
Yeah.
And where did you go from there? When you finished school, did you stay home or did you leave?
I left.
You left.
Left home, left school, all in the space of a month.
Mm.
Yeah.
And where did you set yourself up then? Locally, or did you travel, or did you go away?
I didn't go far. Mm. I met a boy, moved in with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was it then.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that relationship, how was that?
It was very different to what I was used to at home. It was something new, fresh. Mm. I didn't have to be responsible for little kids. I suppose I thought I was looked after in the beginning. Mm. Yeah.
And as time went on, did you feel stable or secure, or was it the opposite when all that newness and freshness wore off? How did that pan out eventually?
It was difficult because it was all so new to me. So I suppose I didn't know any different. I think when I think back, I spent a lot of my time just hoping. Hoping it would get better, hoping for something else. I don't know. I was so young. So it was better than what I had at home, I suppose.
And I guess you were quite vulnerable as well at that age. You know, you were, what, 16, 17?
16 when I left,
Yeah. So eventually then you became pregnant. What age were you when you were pregnant?
18.
How was that for you as an 18-year-old?
Very exciting.
Right.
Yeah, it was a very exciting time. I remember I got the book, What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Anyone in the late 90s, early noughties that were pregnant, that was the book. Yeah.
I read it front to back. I had highlighted stuff. I had circled stuff. And then there was a little note section on the back where I'd write in my notes from every appointment and how big he was growing and how I was feeling and all these kind of things. It was very exciting.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Very exciting.
And so you gave birth to a baby boy.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like?
Amazing.
When he was born.
I didn't expect it to be a boy. We didn't know. So that was exciting.
Yeah. Tell me about that when he arrived.
I was 3 days overdue and very heavy and very, fed up like you would be. But there was big excitement because this would have been the first, I suppose, grandchild. My grandmother was very excited. It was her great grandchild, her first great grandchild. Very exciting time for the family.
Yeah. And you, how did you feel? Were you scared at all?
I felt like this is what I was born to do.
Really?
This is what I wanted. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I was very maternal, but I always had been, I suppose, from having my brothers with me so young. It just came naturally to me. Yeah.
So you were happy?
So happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So where did things take a turn from there?
I suppose, like with any birth, a new mother, things are harder than you expect them to be. And I suppose I was going on 19 then and always alone with the baby. No sleep. I remember I used to stay awake thinking that would be easier between feeds. So I remember one night I stayed awake. I said, okay, he's due to wake up at 6. I'll just not go to sleep. And then I remember that was one of the worst nights because I was wrecked and I really just didn't want to do it. But I had no one to call. I had no one to call to just say, can you help me? Can you just feed him? And then I'll take over again. So it felt like a lot of pressure and no rest ever. And I mean, he was a tiny baby. And I wanted to do it all, but I suppose I didn't realize I couldn't do it all by myself. And I was by myself a lot. Yeah.
So that took a toll on you mentally?
Mentally, but I suppose I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah. You probably know now.
I know now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was just getting up and getting on with it. And I used to dress him up every day in posh outfits, hoping that someone would come and visit. I remember this so clear. He had the best wardrobe, jeans and little jumpers. And every day, I'd say, I'll dress him up nice now in case we have visitors. And no one ever came. No one ever visited. And I remember maybe a year went by when I realized that, you know, and I think that's when I realized this is really hard and I can't do this.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you and I have spoke at length before we decided to sit down and record this. I know that relationship ended that you were in at the time. And I suppose for you, things got quite dark, would it be fair to say?
Yeah.
Do you mind talking us through how you're feeling and what happened?
I felt a whole lot of responsibility suddenly because I was completely on my own. And no one around me. No one to even think to call. Sometimes I would call my grandmother. And I remember leaving her with him one day. I had to go to the post office or something like that. And he was in his little maxi cozy car seat. And she had plonked him on her dinner table in front of the TV. And when I picked him up maybe an hour later, he was still there. But he was happy. She had minded him, but she didn't have to do much. And I still remember that because it was the one time I ever asked for help for such a simple thing. And I didn't want to be asking her again, you know. I didn't want people to think Alva needs help. So I just never asked anyone again. I knew in the back of my mind if I needed to, I could ask her, but I never wanted to. So I was just on my own an awful lot. And he was now walking, running, talking. I suppose I felt sad for him at this time because he had nobody. And that would make me very sad.
Mm.
Because he was sad and lonely.
Okay.
And he would cry a lot for people he was used to seeing and now wasn't seeing anymore.
Mm.
And that was the most hurtful thing for me, was I couldn't help him. I couldn't fix it.
Mm.
And it was just the two of us day in, day out. And also, like, I had friends at the time, but I didn't want them to know what was going on because I think I was embarrassed.
Mm.
You know, they were in college and had boyfriends. And I just didn't want anyone to know that my life was shit, you know.
So you pulled away, I suppose, and distanced yourself from people.
Yeah.
And that further isolates yourself then.
Like if anyone asked me, how are things? I would say, grand. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as socializing, going out, meeting friends, things like that didn't happen.
I remember going out one night just before. And you could ask anyone about me and they'd say she was in great form. I didn't really go out much, but I went out that night and I had the best time. I was dancing and I feel like I was living my last night, it felt to me. I had so much fun. Yeah.
Consciously, did you feel in that moment, this is like going to be one of my last nights?
I knew going home that night. I said that was my last night and I had so much fun. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I now know that you then made a decision that you'd had enough. Obviously things were taking a toll on you inside. And maybe you know more now with looking back. But you then decided to end your life.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult to talk about.
Yeah.
But could you bring us back there and maybe tell us how you got to that point maybe and when you decided to do this?
I think I decided that morning when I woke up. My son was really sad. And it was the weekend. And I thought it might be easier to do something with him. But the way I was feeling was, I just don't want to do anything. I don't want to do anything. And I can't even bring him anywhere. I'm not able to take him to the playground. I just don't want to do anything. I had no, like, energy. And I think at the back of my head, I was trying to think, who can I get to mind him for a day so that I can just sleep for a day And I couldn't think of anyone. I remember at the time looking through the contacts in my phone. And I couldn't think of anyone. So I didn't decide really anything. I just knew, okay, tonight is going to be my last night. And this was still early in the morning. And I went to the shop. And he was with me. And then I went to the next shop. And I think between Spittle and Carrow, I stopped in every shop. This was still in the morning. And I remember in one shop, the shopkeeper said, "Hi, Alva, how are you?" And I just said, "Grant, I'm great. How are you?" And I look back and I think he had no idea. And, you know, what do people think after the fact? You know, if I wasn't here anymore, would he be thinking, "Jesus, I saw her that morning and she was in great form"? But yeah, I was just feeling sad all day. And after I had been to the shops, I went to a local graveyard. And I just find it very peaceful sitting in a graveyard and looking out at the sea and thinking about all the people that want to be here still, but they're not here. And how there's people here that don't want to be here. And, you know, I was thinking, I want to trade places. And some of these graves were very old. And I was imagining what their lives would have been. And I just got very sad thinking about all of these people that I'm with. That's how it felt. And then I went home and I just had a normal day, made dinner, gave my son a bath, and then I put him to bed. And I texted some of my friends just to see where they were and if they wanted to come over. They were all at a party. And I just felt very lonely then, because I thought, okay, I wasn't invited to this party. But also, I have more reason now. You know, maybe a part of me was thinking, if one of them had said, "We'll come up," you know, it wouldn't have happened. I'm not blaming them at all. But maybe I was looking for a reason, maybe looking for something that would stop me.
Did you feel scared in that moment?
I wasn't really thinking anything. I wasn't feeling anything. I know I tried to write down some things, not to anyone in particular. And at that stage, I was just crying and ruining the page. So I was like, this is a waste of time. And it got late into the night, but I felt nothing. I had no thoughts. You know, the way some people might say now, like, "God, what was she thinking? You know, how could she do that?" But I wasn't thinking. I had no thoughts. I was thinking nothing.
Numb.
Just numb. And I couldn't bear another day. I couldn't bear the next day. And that was it. The house was very quiet. I didn't really think anyone would care. That's how I was feeling. No one is going to care, really. And even now, when I think back, if I had succeeded back then, I really don't think it would have changed anyone's life majorly, which sounds terrible to say, but I really don't think I would have been missed majorly. It wouldn't have had a huge impact. I was so alone and isolated at that stage. There wasn't many people around me. I would be forgotten by now. I know that much. So I didn't feel much back then.
Your son is obviously mm-hmm. in bed.
Yeah.
Was there any thoughts around him?
I had no thoughts. No.
None. Yeah.
He was just turned 2. He was sleeping in his cot. And I remember looking at him thinking, what a shit life you have with me. He was sad all the time and I couldn't do anything to help him. And I thought, if I'm not here, he'll have a better life with somebody. I couldn't think who, but it will work out for him. He doesn't need me. Yeah. I just wasn't thinking. Yeah. And then it was terrible then after that. It was terrible. It was unstoppable and very scary. And right away, I was like, I don't want to die. It was too painful. I managed to call a friend of mine who was confused, but I was just thinking, my son is in bed. I can't leave, you know. But between them, a few people managed to have someone stay. Another person brought me into Galway to the hospital. And I'll never forget that night going into A&E, thinking I was dying in the waiting room, and they left me there. And the treatment I had was just so judgmental. And I felt like they didn't want to look after me because of what I had done. That's how I felt. I kept getting sick and there was no sympathy. But I eventually got moved into a room and I must have gone to sleep. And when I woke up in the middle of the night, there was like a trolley, like an ambulance trolley at the end of the bed. And they said, Ava, we have to move you to Dublin urgently. And I was so confused by what was happening. But they had told me that they had been checking my bloods during the night every hour and that they had reached a certain number. I don't know what it was. I remember saying, at what number do you die? And they said, it's different for everyone, but it's very high for you right now. And we got into the ambulance. And to me, it feels like we got to Dublin in 20 minutes. It was so fast. I had never been in an ambulance before. But the lady that was in the back with me spent the entire journey with her hand on my stomach. And she rubbed my face. And she was telling me it was going to be okay. And I was kind of in and out. It's all a blur, really. It feels like we just got there so fast. The sirens were going and we were just moving so fast. And by the time I got to Dublin, I think I was just asleep. Because the next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in a room by myself and it's daylight. And there was just machines all over me and I felt like I was dead. Everything was white. The sheets were so white. The walls were so white. And maybe I was dreaming, I don't know, but I could hear voices outside planning a funeral. And I thought, I know that voice from somewhere. Like, I know that voice. I knew I was in Dublin. It felt different to me. And I was thinking, who else could I know in Dublin who'd be talking about me? And then I was thinking, they're not talking about me. They're planning a funeral. I must have gone back to sleep again. So I don't know, did I dream that? I thought in my head I was hearing my mother's voice, but I don't know, was that a dream or did I hear that? My skin was so yellow and my stomach was, like, I looked pregnant. And a doctor came in, and I'll always remember his face. He was so handsome. White coat, dark skin, like so dark, gorgeous man. And he came in and he said, Alva, you're in critical condition and we need to get you a transplant. But you need to get better first. And I must have gone back to sleep again. I don't really remember much or how much time went by. And eventually I was better enough to go back to Galway. I don't know how long I had to stay, but I know I was well enough to walk up and down around the hospital and go out for fresh air. And in my head, I was thinking, where is my son? Now that I'm back in Galway, I can make sure he's safe. A friend of mine did say he was with her, and I was okay with that. But then she said, Alva, I don't think we can keep him for long. And one night I walked down to the front doors of the hospital in my dressing gown. I think I just wanted someone to talk to. And there was always a crowd out there. But I didn't see anyone really that was, you know, in the mood to talk. And I looked across out the car park and I thought, I could just walk out now and no one would know. But I'm wearing my dressing gown. So, but because I had been admitted into hospital in my clothes, I still had those clothes on. No one ever brought me in pajamas. So I was still wearing those clothes under my dressing gown. So I said, I'll take off my dressing gown here and I'll just walk. So I did that. And I walked as far as I got to the gate. I said, okay, I'm free now. I had nothing in my room. I had no belongings. So I just started walking. The intention was to walk home. It was dark and it was November time. And I just kept walking. I remember walking through Taylor's Hill and not knowing how I got that far. I remember being in Knocknacara then. I was so sore. I was in so much pain. It was just one step after the next, thinking, I need to get home. I need to get home. And then a friend of mine called me and she said, Alva, did I just see you walking on the road? I said, yeah. And she picked me up. And I said, I just need to get my son. And she said, okay, I'll bring you there. And she brought me there and I told her, you don't need to wait, you can go. I'll be fine here. I suppose in my head I thought, this is where there'll be support. Things will change now. Things will be better. I just turned around and walked away. And I remember thinking, I'll just walk in front of a truck now. It won't matter now at this stage. And I walked home to my own place over the road in agony. And I had like a big stomach. I looked about 6 months pregnant. I was in agony. And I still had hospital tags on me. And I got home to my own place and it was freezing cold. No one had been there to welcome me or clean up. You know, the mess was still there from the night that I was last there. And it was just so depressing. It was awful. And I really felt alone. I just curled into a ball in this freezing cold bed for the first time in my life without my son. I had never been away from him before. And I just cried myself to sleep. Yeah, it was a terrible time.
The worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I suppose a large part of your life and your story, what we now know, is that state services became involved and you were separated from your son for 9 years.
9 years it took. Process, yeah. Yeah.
I suppose it's hard to get into some things. Some things, you know, it's difficult to speak about. But I suppose I don't want to jump past those 9 years. How did you survive yourself having come so close to death? And even when you've come out of the hospital, still feeling like I could walk in front of this truck, who cares? How did you come out of that, first of all, to manage to survive those years? And maybe second to that, what was it like to be separated from your son?
I think I just try to put it to the back of my head and keep myself busy. I hated fighting with people, so I just never argued and I never questioned it. I did what I was told. Shortly after that, it was my 21st birthday. And I had a small party with some friends and cousins. I think a part of me was just blocking it out of my head. Maybe it would have been too painful to think about. Time went on and, you know, a plan was put in place. You know, I was working, I was paying rent, I was doing everything the proper way, you know, I was doing everything right.
How was it? I think I can imagine what it would be like seeing him.
Mm-hmm.
How was it leaving him those times and not being able to go home
together? I used to plan my life around work and those days so that I never had an empty day. I just used to work day and night around the days where he wasn't there.
Did it kill you inside?
It did. It did, yeah. Yeah. It did. And he was happy, you know, because when he was with me, we would always do something, always had a plan. And he used to love spending time with, you know, my cousins or, you know, my other family members, and we'd have parties, birthday parties, and his communion day was one of the best days of our lives. Just everyone came, you know, even into darkness, we were still on this bouncy castle, and just it was, we had happy memories, but then it would be over again, you know, for another few days.
Okay.
But we just got used to it.
And you? Is there any care in terms of counselling, therapy, ongoing, anybody in the system taking care of you? Or, you know, is there a continuation from the hospital when you leave?
No.
There's nothing.
No.
Nothing.
No. And I really felt the blame. I felt it in how my life was. No matter what I did, no matter how I tried to improve my life, there was always a hurdle or, you know, hoops I had to jump through.
Mm-hmm.
Just to ask for anything else, it was just so tough and difficult to get any kind of help. There was nothing.
So from like an ongoing care standpoint, when you left that day in the hospital, you never went back, obviously.
Yeah.
There was no phone calls, nothing. Nope. To see where's she gone?
No.
Nothing?
No, never heard from them again. Which is crazy to me when you hear the stories today
And your health, did that leave an impact? Or, you know, obviously it was your liver that mm-hmm. was damaged.
Yeah.
But we hear that the liver is great at coming back.
Yeah.
Did you have any health difficulties after that?
I didn't drink for many years, and I had to be checked up on. I used to go to my GP just to check everything was repairing itself.
Mm.
And I minded myself, yeah.
Come back.
Yeah,
you
I
came
did.
Back from that.
Yeah.
From a health standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Mentally, did you feel like you were depressed, or did you get any help even with that from your GP?
Word depression was never used ever. No, I think though, that's probably what it was.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no one ever asked me, why did you do that? What was happening? What was going on? And are you okay? No one's ever asked me. I just got on with it and life just went on. Yeah.
So, I suppose without getting into the ins and the outs of it, you eventually get your son back after 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? How did it feel for you?
I had gotten to the point where I was so frustrated. And I was starting to sense a real unfairness. As the years went on, you know, I had met a man, we were engaged, we were planning babies, and life was so good. And I said, hold on a minute now, this isn't fair. And I said, that's it, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I did get very angry. I kind of found an inner voice, and I was so angry. And I started court proceedings then. And it went from there. Everything got sorted. And it was good. But I don't remember celebrating. Mm. There was no celebration.
Mm.
It felt like too much time had gone by. And
it was a tragedy, really.
Yeah.
So when your son is back in your life permanently, then mm-hmm. he's 11-ish at
yeah.
this stage?
Yeah.
How was that for you? Did you feel a sense of wholeness now that he was back full time with you?
There was still a bit of adapting.
Okay.
So he was, I suppose, at the end of primary school. I had two small babies then at that stage. And
yeah, because I guess it's
yeah,
it's a change for him, for yeah. everyone. So you now have yeah. to all have to adapt together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you feel loss at that point? Were you acutely aware of everything you had lost?
I remember thinking that I had wanted to be a mother my whole life, and that it was taken from me so early on that even when I had the other kids, I couldn't fully be 100% completely. Which was difficult, if that makes sense, you know. Mm. But things got sorted. We all moved on. I suppose when you're in it, you're just getting up and dealing with it every day. It's only really when you look back and you think, why did I put up with so much? Why did I take so much? Could I have ended it sooner? The whole process shouldn't have gone on as long as it did. But I never knew. I didn't know any other way what my rights were. I never knew.
Mm. Horrendous.
Mm.
So you've built this new life with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
You've 3 children at this point.
With 3 together, yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
You've 3, so you at the point that you were reunited with your son,
mm-hmm. yeah.
You have 4?
Four altogether. We had 2 under 2 at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then another one came along
and then
after
another one
your,
came along later, yeah. Yeah.
And so I know you then had tragedy in your husband's family.
Mm-hmm.
You lost your brother-in-law, tragic circumstances.
Yeah.
that obviously rattled everyone.
Yeah.
How did it impact you personally, I suppose?
Well, I suppose I was pregnant at the time.
Mm.
And life was running so smoothly. It was during COVID, so it was different for everyone, but for us it was nice, peaceful. And I was expecting. And it was sudden and tragic. So it was something we just had to deal with as a family. I took on the responsibility of being there as much as I could for the kids, especially. My family were in and out, you know. I suppose it was hard to understand, you know. We had never experienced anything like this before. And it was sad. Mm. I then had a lot of complications in my pregnancy. And at that stage, I was just coping just about, you know, with the kids and the grieving and everything else was just getting a lot. So the hospital were saying to me, you need to stay in. And you'll probably deliver early. They thought I was going to deliver at 26 weeks, which wasn't going to be good. And I remember saying, I don't want to be here. I need to be home. I need to be home with my kids. And I discharged myself. And then I was back in again. I think I went in about 4 times. And then I just stopped complaining about my problems. I remember being at home and just bleeding every day, but not calling my doctor for fear that she'd send me back in again. I said, I actually don't have time to be in hospital. If you can't find the problem, I'd rather just be at home with my kids. So I don't know really what was going on for me, but just I wasn't looking after myself at all.
Okay.
Yeah, there had been just such a shift, you know. Life was so good and peaceful and we were so happy to be expecting. And then just this sudden tragedy just pulled the rug from under us and everything changed.
Mm.
So I think I just stopped caring about anything else after that, as long as my kids were safe and that we were happy. I wasn't thinking about anything else.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And does baby arrive safely then?
She arrived safely. She did. Yeah, Ivy.
Oh.
Yeah.
In terms of, I suppose, where you come from, you went on a search because you had never really met your birth father.
Mm-hmm.
And you got curious. You didn't really know who he was. Would I be right in saying that?
Never knew him, but the name had popped up a few times.
Okay.
With having kids, you have to give your birth name to register.
Mm.
So when I had my first, this is when it first flagged with me, but I suppose I never really gave it much thought.
Mm.
And then the more kids I had, it kept being flagged. And, you know, it was only really after I had Ivy and things were different and family had fallen away. And I said, I need to just find out once and for all what's going on with this name. It was an unusual name.
Mm.
And it was on all of the kids' birth certs now, my marriage cert, everything. So I went investigating. I called the registry office first and I said, do you have a record of this name? And they did, because it was so unusual. They found a marriage cert first. And I remember shaking on the phone. I was shaking because this was just shocking news to me.
Okay.
I always believed that I was born out of wedlock in the 80s. And that's why I was treated the way that I was at school or by anyone else. You know, there was a judgment there. So then I found this and I thought, okay, changes things. And then I went looking more into this name. Facebook was great for that. And I found this woman and She said, Alva, I'm your aunt. And I was like, great. Do you have any info for me? You know, I wasn't really looking for a relationship, really. I just wanted to know
about
your him. Yeah. I said, do you know where he is or anything? And she said, yeah, he's my brother. And she said, he was looking for you for years. He came to Spittle looking for you recently. And it was maybe the year before or 2 years before that. And I said, great. And she said, but Alva, he died. And I didn't feel upset at hearing that. It was just the adrenaline was, I found him. And then she had told me, oh, well, he's dead, you know. So it was just a dead end. But then she said, you know, we had informed people that he was dying. He had come looking for you.
So you never got that message?
I never got the message, no, no.
What did that do to you?
I mean, it's a chance that can't be taken back. You know, you can never take that back.
This is where loss comes into it then.
So I never had a dad. And sometimes I would look at people who have a dad and I sometimes wonder, God, I wish I knew what that felt like to have a dad. I look at my daughter with my husband and I sometimes wonder what it feels like for her to have that. You know, to have a man standing up for you, protecting you. I used to always think my loss was, what would it feel like to have a mother? But actually, it's not having a father at all, really, that I wonder about the most. And that it was never a choice I was given. Yeah.
That's really sad.
Yeah. It is.
Even when you go back to that 13-year-old sitting on the rock, mixed up in her head with no real sense of why you were so sad and so broken, but things like that obviously played into it.
I think if I had had a dad at 13, would I have been on that beach alone crying? You know, I think dads are so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never had one.
Knowing now that you had one, a dad, and he was actively trying to find you, regardless of why you didn't get the message, you knew he was looking for you. You now know that.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do to you? Does it make you... Does it break your heart?
It makes me a bit angry, to be honest. It's unfair. He was dying when he came looking for me. Yeah.
What do you feel about him? Thinking of... What do you feel towards him?
To be honest, not much.
Okay.
Really, to be completely honest. I think it's very easy to put blame on people, but he's a grown man. At the end of the day, you know, he could have come at any stage. Now, maybe he wasn't allowed, I know that, but I see it that's the side I see it from, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In this day and age, I think it shouldn't matter what's stopping you from seeing your kids.
Mm-hmm.
You need to fight for them.
Mm.
And so... I do feel sad for him, but I don't know him that well. I don't know him at all. Never met him, but it was also a choice he made too. Over 30 years.
Do you feel let down?
Yeah. 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 I think coming from where we do and then, you know, the generation, no one spoke about anything. You know, my grandparents were good, but they never spoke about anything, even though they would have been aware of what was happening.
There was an awful lot of It's an awful lot of sweeping under the carpet there,
yeah.
wasn't there?
Yeah, yeah. There is.
There's parallels, though, with you and your dad in terms of that separation from your child.
Yeah.
And for whatever reasons, you were separated, maybe against your will. And maybe your dad, against his will, was separated from you.
Yeah.
And I understand what you're saying, like, but I feel like when you were separated from your child, you were you were extremely young yourself.
Yeah.
You know? So you have that knowledge now of who, you know, genetically who you come from, you know, with your dad.
It's interesting because when I went on the search and this woman was great, his sister, it made so much sense to me when she explained that her ancestry had come from a foreign country. And I had been dark as a child and mildly bullied for the way I looked at school. I'm much whiter now than I was, but it made so much sense. And then she was showing me photos. Photos from everyone, her grandparents, her parents, and her brother. And then half sisters or half brothers, I suppose, that I have out there who are all very dark and Nepalese. So I find that fascinating, very interesting. So I still feel like there's still a lot to be discovered, that side of things. And I suppose because I feel like I have no family, but that there is still so much family out there in the world to be discovered that are relatable to me, I suppose. You know, maybe someone out there will get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a unique and interesting situation.
Yeah.
So, I suppose, currently, the relationships with your own family fell away, and I know that you're not in contact with your family. You know, it is something that many, many, many people can understand, and it's very unspoken. There's an awful lot of shame attached. It's an awful lot of whispering done. It's not something people even discuss with their friends. It's just unspoken, but it's reality. So without, I suppose, getting into who, what, how that came to be, for me, I'm interested in what is it like to have no contact? How does that impact you?
It is a loss. It's like a hole inside. When you've had something all of your life, even just a little bit, and then it's all taken away, it is a sudden loss almost. And then there's no reason or there's no explanation. So there was a lot of sleepless nights wondering, did I say something? Did I do something? But at the time that it's happening, you're not realizing that it's happening. You know, I had just had Ivy and there was so much else going on that I wasn't noticing that people weren't texting back or that people were distancing. I wasn't noticing it. But it was getting lonelier and lonelier at the time. Until I suddenly realized, okay, I don't have a family anymore. And that came suddenly, that feeling, the realization of it. And I remember one night just seeing a photo online. And I felt devastated. Like I felt like I couldn't breathe. Like there was something stuck in my throat. You know, like I was being choked or something. I just wanted to cry. I hadn't cried in so long. And I just, but I didn't want the kids to hear me cry. So I remember I ran out the back door and into the shed so that I could cry. And my husband came out after me and he just held me and I couldn't breathe. And he said, it's okay, Alva. I know what it's like to lose a brother. I know You're feeling empty. And I felt like a bit of an idiot as well. Like, how did I not realize this was happening around me? I was so caught up in the newborn and the other kids and everything else that I didn't even realize what was happening around me. Or maybe I just wasn't seeing it or believing it. Or you don't think you're going to lose your family. You don't think it. And then one day you realize no one's there for you. And it's very hard to make sense of that. There's no explanation. And I might never have answers. You know, I used to be so obsessed thinking, I'm going to die one day and I'll never know why this has happened. But we've gone through every scenario, every reason. I don't think we'll ever know, really, truly, why it happened. Yeah.
Do you feel like you've real grief for people who are alive?
Mm.
Do you imagine it's no different to if they're dead?
It sounds silly to say this, to think that. But I had proper, like, triggering moments sometimes when I'd see families together. I'd be in the playground with my kids and I'd see a family. I'd see a grandmother with her grandkids, or I'd see siblings having coffee together. And it would be just like a kick in the heart, and I would just start crying. And I'd leave. And it used to make me feel angry. And then I'd be like, why am I so angry? Like, this is lovely for them. They have each other. And I used to feel the unfairness of it. You know, like, I should have that. And it's not fair on my kids also who have lost family. So it is a grief. It does feel like grief to me, just a different type of grief. You know, there's memories or just Christmas traditions we would have had. I remember everyone's birthday, but I'm afraid to say anything, or, you know, and then you wonder what's going on with them. Are they okay? Do they think of me? Do they remember me? You know? And if I died tomorrow, would they be there? I always think of that. You know, what would happen if one of us died? What do you do?
Do you ever have, I'm not asking if you have done or if you will do, do you ever have a pull to, okay, I'm going to try and sort this out?
I did have that. And I did reach out.
Doors are closed, not happening.
There's no response. And that to me is, when the ball is in someone else's court, you can't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to move on and forget about it, basically. Yeah.
Makes me want to cry.
I know. I've cried it all. I can't cry anymore.
It's very sad. Yeah,
it is sad. Yeah.
Sad too. Well, you know, I have a lot of thoughts on it. I think, first of all, there's a real, I don't know if you'd agree with this, there's a real sense of people take it for granted that, you know, you're going to be so close to your family. And it's just a presumption. It's a presumption that, you know, a stranger will say, oh, and are you going home for Christmas? And I'm sure your mom and dad are a great help when you have a child. Mm-hmm. And all these things are just constantly taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And you probably tune into this podcast and hear people saying, talking about their loved ones, especially their family, and how much they mean to them. And there can be a presumption that that's the same for everyone, but it's not. And I know, and I've told you this, the amount of people that might tune into this and will finally go, oh my God, thank God somebody has said it.
Yeah.
Because family estrangement fallouts is so common. It is so common.
Yeah.
It's just not spoken about for many reasons. We don't want to get into, and we haven't done that today. We haven't spoke about blame. We haven't named anyone. We haven't done any of that. But what we're talking about is the impact of that. Mm-hmm. And I feel it rising up in me where I just want to cry, thinking, regardless of whose fault it is or who's to blame, regardless of all of that, just the situation is very sad.
Yeah.
Because in an ideal world, that's your... your family is your home. Mm. And when you don't have a close relationship, there's no home.
You build your own home. Yeah.
But there's no, as we say in Ireland, home.
Well, I have no home. When someone says my home house, I don't have a home house. It's where I live now with my kids. That's my home house. It almost feels like I have no past. You know, I got married and then that's when I got a name, I got kids and a house, and there's nothing before. Everything before is just, it's not there.
It's like it's erased almost.
Yeah. And I do feel like when people talk about their family and they love them, or like the loss of, say, their father or their mother, I do feel sad for them. You know, I have a friend whose mother died. She was amazing. And we were so young at the time. And I remember she used to always give out about her mother being mean, not being mean, but not letting her go to the disco, you know. And I would see it from my point of view as your mother cares about you because she's not letting you go. And she would say, nah, my mother's a bitch. She's not letting me go. But after her mother passed away, it was very hard for her. And it was sad for all of us. And the years went by and she used to say, Alva, what would mom say? What would mom say? You know, whenever I'd be having a difficult time, what would mom say? What would mom do? And we'd always be trying to think of what her mom would do in these situations. What would mom say? You know, and her mom's advice was always there, even when she wasn't still living. I always thought, what would her mom say? You know? So I do feel the loss of other people's moms, because I know how important it is for people. I know you're supposed to be close and love your mom, and your mom is supposed to love you. I know that. So I feel it in other people. But I will never know what it feels like to have parents. That's the norm for me. But all I can do is try not to pass that on. And I think to be a good mom, your children just have to feel loved. It's as simple as that. That's all it is to be a good mom.
Are you a good mom?
I'm a good mom. Not every day of the week. But I know my children feel loved, and that's all I can do. Yeah.
Do you adore those kids?
Oh, stop it. I mean, I'd have four more if I could. I would.
I hope your husband tunes out.
Yeah. But like that, with having kids, it's difficult without family. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd have four more. But without family, it's very difficult.
It is hard, yeah.
You know, because you can't be everywhere at once. Mm. And just with the ones I have, I'm, you know, juggling everything. And you're trying to give everyone attention and you can't be there for all of them at once. But I try my best.
I suppose just thinking about what I suppose to sum up your life, and there's so many different things I know that we didn't get into or didn't go, different places we didn't go. But really and truly, I suppose I sense that your loss just feels like having no center of gravity almost. You know, that it's a loss of safety, of connection, of meaning, of worth, all of those things.
Yeah.
But you've rebuilt all of that. I suppose, where are you now? How do you feel now? Do you feel a sense of peace?
Mm.
You finally have got to that place of peace.
Yeah. Peace is a big thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's a choice almost though, isn't it?
Yeah. Acceptance first.
Mm.
Yeah. I remember people would ask before, you know, how are you? How are things? Like in recent years. And I'd always say, oh, grand, yeah, good, grand. And after I had Ivy, things were not good. But I'd still say, oh, I'm grand. Even though there may have been days, I don't know how I got out of bed. And I'd still be making chit-chat about the kids and the weather. And then go home and I'd cry all night. And I'd think, I don't want to wake up again tomorrow. It's too hard. And I remember someone texted me and said, how are things? And I said, you know what? I'm not going to say I'm grand anymore, because I've been saying I'm grand all my life. And I said, actually, I'm not so good today. And I got no response. So I think now when someone asks me, how are you? And if I tell you I'm grand, I'm good, I really am good, because I'll tell you if I'm not good. And I think that's important. Mm. I think it's very easy to make chit-chat at the school gates about the weather and say you're grand. But if you're not, it's okay to say you're not. It doesn't have to be dramatic.
Yeah.
You don't need to expect anything, but just say, it's not a great day. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there's that saying, like, it's okay to not be okay.
Mm.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with it. I think it's not okay to not be okay. And I think if you're not okay, just say it. Just say you're not okay. You know? Don't be telling everyone around you you're grand. Just be honest. You know, it doesn't have to be a big thing. Just say.
I love that take.
Yeah.
You're right.
But I spent my life saying I'm grand.
But you weren't grand.
It was never grand.
Far from it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I briefly make you think back on, as I say, I'll say it as it is, the suicide attempt.
Mm-hmm.
Those are difficult words to say sometimes, aren't they?
Yeah.
Where you are today now and the life that you have and the family that you've built, beautiful, warm, caring family that you have around you. When you look back on the you that wanted to check out, how does that make you feel now? Is there any sense of regret, shame, understanding? What do you feel when you think about that actually happened?
I think how sad it was for that girl who had nobody. I sometimes find it hard to connect. It was so long ago. Different life. There was no hope. But there was no one there to help. And there was no one there to say, how are you? Can I help you? Do you want to talk? There was none of that. So when you're alone, it's very easy to feel like that. You know, and I still get thoughts like that. But I know maybe all you need is a cup of tea and to talk to somebody.
You have that now.
I have that now. Yeah.
And your husband and everyone else.
Yeah.
Do you think isolation can lead to, not in all cases, as you say, some people are, you know, out partying and having, you look at them and think there's not a thing wrong.
That was me.
Yeah.
That was me. But for that last night, yeah.
But isolation, I suppose, feeling alone.
Well, when you're left feeling very unimportant and very insignificant in life, you know, when someone tells you the world would be better off without you, it's very hard to think any other way. You start to believe things and you have no one else to tell you that's not true. You know? So it's very easy to get sucked into the dark thoughts. And also I was so young. You know?
Vulnerable.
Yeah. I would have believed anything. And I know now, I don't know, is it my age or experience, but nobody could talk to me like that now and get away with it. I would never, ever, ever let someone talk to me like that now. And that's the difference with who you're around, who's supporting you, who's nice to you. You know, it's the difference. I stand up for myself now. I have respect for myself now. And I'll speak up for others. I don't tolerate bullshit anymore, basically, you know. But back then, I was just so naive. Yeah.
So one last question is just kind of jumping into my head, I suppose. Who do you think saved you?
I'm the only person that could have done that. Yeah, didn't happen overnight. Yeah. And I think only very recently have I realized that. And what I've actually done recently, I think of it differently now. I think I can't expect anyone else to look after me. I can be my own mother. And I love that feeling because I treat myself now when I never would have before. And so if I treat myself to, I don't know, shopping or something small, even just a fancy coffee is a treat, I sometimes think of myself as my mother treating my little self. You know, I'm my mother treating my younger self to this coffee or to nails or something. And I love that feeling, you know, that I'm minding me and I'm the only person that can mind me. And it's taken a long time to realize that you don't need anyone else to save you. You know, it has to be you. You know?
Yeah.
But it's taken many, many years to see my own value in life. Many years.
You see it now?
I do.
Truly?
I do, yeah. I think I'm pretty cool. I think I'm not as bad as I was treated. I'm not as bad as people told me I was. I'm not as ugly and horrible as people said I was. And it's only very recently that I can see that now. I'm a good person. I'm a good mom. I'm honest. And I think that's all you can be.
I think you're great. It's been a real honor to sit across from you and hear your take on life and about your life and where it brought you, where it almost brought you. And I'm glad that you're here. It's been a real, real honor to sit across from you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with me.
Thank you.
Before we finish, I just want to pause for a moment. What you've just heard is one person's lived experience of grief, loss, and survival. There are many layers to stories like this, and no one story captures the whole picture, but there is real value in speaking honestly about how loss can shape a life. If this conversation has resonated with you, or if you're navigating grief of your own, I've recently opened a gentle support space called After the Flowers. It's a low-cost monthly membership for people who are grieving, whether that's the loss of a person, a relationship, or a sense of home. It includes group conversations, live Zoom support calls, and sessions focused on supporting the nervous system through grief, like breath work, meditation, and grounding practices. There's no pressure at all. It's simply there if and when it feels right for you. The link is in the bio. And finally, if anything in today's episode has brought things up for you, or if you're struggling with thoughts of suicide or feeling overwhelmed, please know that support is available. If you're in Ireland, you can contact Samaritans on 116 123 anytime, day or night. If you're outside Ireland, please reach out to your local crisis or mental health support service or speak with your GP. You don't have to go through this alone.